You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
According to Forbes, the Food and Drug Administration approved 44 drugs in 2014. Last September, Ed Silverman wrote in the Wall Street Journal that the number of such drugs approved each year by the FDA is closely watched as a sign of agency efficiency, which greatly affects the well-being of patients as well as the fortunes of drug makers and their investors. The FDA may make many people happy when it approves a new drug, but what happens when it finds bad data or fraudulent test results by drug companies? After Charles Seif looked into that question, he found that the FDA actually has done very little about the problem. Charles Seif is a journalism professor at NYU, author of Sun in a Bottle and Proofiness. His latest article for Slate is Are Your Medications Safe? I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Was there some specific incident that got you into thinking about investigating FDA practices?
Well, there were a few documents that I'd been coming across and doing research. Almost always a document describing an inspection. And so the FDA does these inspections of clinical trial sites to see whether the trials are going well or not, or whether there's fraud. And once in a while, about 2% of the time, when they send an inspector in, something goes wrong. So I saw a few of these and decided to investigate.
And you got your NYU journalism class involved?
Yes. I had a...
Because this is a big issue?
It is a big issue. We had to look through hundreds and hundreds of documents, roughly 600 plus documents, all of which described a failed inspection of some sort where something serious was going wrong.
They're called their inspection files?
They're called warning letters. They're called 483s, which is a technical form 483, inspection reports, and all sorts of other documents.
Can anyone gain access to them?
Yes, sort of. A lot of the warning letters are posted online along with documents that are associated with those, but a lot of them you actually have to request through the Freedom of Information Act, which means that it is publicly accessible, but it's kind of hard to get.
So you got to send in a FOIA each time you want to get this kind of information?
If you want to get detailed information, yes. And even then, sometimes it's redacted so that you don't know what you're seeing.
What about those redactions? Why would they redact something that is a matter of public knowledge or a public record?
Well, there's always a balance when it comes to revealing something. As Jeb Bush found out recently, that if you just dump documents out there, you might reveal personal information or commercially sensitive information. The documents that were redacted with the inspections were redacted because the FDA determined that the names of the drugs that were affected by these false trials, the names of the protocols, were commercially sensitive information. That revealing this would hurt these companies.
But if it's falsified information, wouldn't we want to hurt those companies?
Well, that's exactly it. I think that, in fact, that they are interpreting the law incorrectly. By sensitive information does not protect fraud, and it only means that an opponent, a competing company using it affirmatively will actually do damage.
Not just fraud, but fakery. Some of the tests for x-rays or retinal scans were faked.
That's right. You take the same retina scan and you publish it. You use it 7 or 8 times and call it 7 or 8 different patients. We saw that happening, x-rays and other more gruesome stuff as well.
You write that you cracked a bunch of the redactions. How did you do that?
Well, as data companies know, lots of little bits of information taken together, you can assemble a picture that is much greater than the sum of the parts. And so we looked at quirks in the protocols, ways that the this particular experiment was done differently than others to identify the specific experiment that was tainted.
Are there whistleblowers at the FDA who are concerned about these things?
There are, and they're usually treated fairly badly. Once every 3-4 years, you'll get some revelation where a FDA whistleblower comes out and says, stop, this drug is a problem, we're pushing too fast, and they get a little bit of headline and they disappear.
But when we were talking about the redactions, you write that portions of the FDA warning letters to drug companies are redacted. They're sending these warnings and then nothing is happening anyway?
They send these letters and in rare cases, there's some sort of disciplinary action taken that a researcher may say, they might say to a researcher, you can't do any more research for 3 years. or you can never do FDA research again. But generally speaking, the consequences are very small, if any at all.
What is the FDA's process when it's looking for fraud or misconduct in a trial?
Well, generally speaking, the inspections are in support of a new drug application. So what they're doing is they're looking at the trials that are saying that this is safe and effective. And if an inspector finds a problem...
How would they find a problem? Do they go to the laboratories?
Yeah, they send a two or three inspectors to go through the paperwork. And it really is just kind of a paperwork, make sure all the paperwork is in order, which means that probably they're not catching a lot of the hanky-panky that's going on. So they go through the paperwork, make sure everything's in order, make sure that the what's being reported to the drug company and the FDA matches what's in the patient's hospital records. And if things match up, great. If there are problems, then they're cited. And depending on the severity, the citations could get serious.
Does it inform all relevant parties?
Well, they inform the person who is cited. They inform often the sponsor of the drug. And the FDA itself knows. But sometimes even crucial people who should know this information are not told.
And is anyone penalized when the fraud is quite obvious?
Well, often it's not really happening. Sometimes you'll get somebody fired. But I have instances where there's fraud going on and the researcher is hired again to do medical research.
Well, if the FDA finds that something has been done wrong and then doesn't do anything about it, why do they even bother to investigate?
Well, what they're trying to do is make sure that the data is valuable so they can say this drug is safe and effective. And so if they do find problems with the data, what they will say is, okay, how does this affect our perception of the study? And in really bad inspections, they will toss out this data. But they don't usually look beyond the individual inspections. They don't say, okay, we failed 4 out of 12 inspections. Maybe this whole study is problematic.
Now, who is actually responsible for the fraud or the fakery? Is it the company that makes the drug or the researcher who's doing the test?
It's really hard to pinpoint intent. Often the people who wind up with the blame are the researchers themselves. But sometimes you see patterns which indicate that there's much more going on. Like a number of years ago, there was an antibiotic called Ketek, which was put on the market based upon a bunch of trials which had tremendous numbers of problems throughout different clinical trials, all run by one research organization. And so the indication is people at the top knew that this was phony, but the consequences were really very shallow.
What kind of fraudulent things are being done in a situation like that?
Well, the easiest thing to do is just fake numbers to make adverse events disappear. And so one of the things you're looking at when you're testing a drug is, does it have any unwanted side effects? So antibiotics, for example, which are in great demand, often cause liver damage. And so if those liver damage reports disappear or even the lab tests, which might indicate a liver damage, get tweaked in a little way, that really affects how people perceive the drug.
And you write about how the FDA got into trouble regarding the antibiotic Ketek. What happened there?
Well, one trial 3014, which was run by a particular researcher, and it turns out it was very, very dirty. She was enrolling people she shouldn't have, duplicating records, basically falsifying a bunch of stuff. And
there's no independent party who checks up on these things while the process is in place?
There's a hierarchy of people who are looking at these things. You've got the researcher at the bottom. Often you've got what's called a contract research organization, which are professional researchers, hired guns. And then on top of that, you've got the drug company who's marketing the drug, and then the FDA is on top of them. So at each level, you're supposedly having people checking. And sometimes they do it right, sometimes they don't. Sometimes the word gets up, sometimes it disappears.
And what happened with Ketek? What did the FDA find?
Well, after a time, they kept finding more and more trials with falsified data, with irregularities, and eventually it wound up with a warning on it. I believe it's a black box, saying that this drug is very dangerous and you should use it under limited circumstances.
But it didn't. It also hid the evidence of the fraud, didn't it?
Yes. Well, the allegations, one of the whistleblowers, a gentleman named David Ross, if I recall correctly, alleged in front of Congress that the FDA knew that these problems were presented, that the inspectors had found these problems, but the problems were not presented to an advisory committee, which was supposed to help the FDA make a decision whether to approve this drug or not. And so there was a vacuum of information, and the advisory committee gave a thumbs up.
Senator Chuck Grassley attempted to get the FDA to disclose more information about bad drug data. Has Congress actually done anything beyond that?
Well, they've tightened some reporting rules. That there's a rule called FDAA, which forces more data about clinical trials to be made public and put in a registry. But there's not teeth behind it.
Are there other drugs that we might consider dangerous that are on the market, even though they were approved as a result of falsified data?
Yeah, I believe there are, but it's always very tricky to say, because just because data is falsified doesn't necessarily imply that the drug is unsafe or dangerous. I think that there are classes of drugs which the trial data is a little bit wonky, and it's a dangerous class of drugs, so I'd look more into it. So the new blood clotting drugs, Xarelto, Eliquis, and Pradaxa, I'm not saying that they're dangerous or that they shouldn't be taken, but there are irregularities with the trials that make me want to look again.
And is this something that's been going on for a long time? Because it's my sense that this started actually under the Obama administration, or right before the Obama administration.
Well, it's been going on for a while, that the rules get tightened administration after administration after administration. Because, I mean, all administrations want the FDA to keep producing these drugs. And so the pressure is kind of a steady drumbeat. But yeah.
But don't they also want them to catch the bad drugs, the drugs that are going to lead to major problems? In the past, there are a few drugs that became major scandals.
Yes, and that happens. And that is a black eye for the FDA. But I think that the incentive for the FDA is to have the steady drumbeat of new drugs. And once in a while, they'll take the hit for a drug that's unsafe or ineffective.
Do changes in FDA policy or a change in the people staffed at the top account for this lack of transparency?
Well, I think that there is a institutional attitude that their job is to help the pharmaceutical industry get these drugs on the market, which is part of their job.
This is kind of like the Department of Agriculture being seeing itself as an exponent for the farming, farmers.
Or the SEC being an exponent for the financial industry. This is a well-known phenomenon known as regulatory capture. And it happens when a regulator looks at an industry and you've got people in common, they've got interests in common, and money flowing back and forth, they're often drawn into the orbit of the industry.
We also have heard a lot about revolving doors in these agencies. Does that apply here as well?
It does. It does. There's lots of people going back and forth to pharma. But, I mean, that's a cost of doing business. I mean, Congress, you've got Billy Towson being the head of pharma for a while. So it's where there's money, there's always people flowing in and out.
You wrote in ProPublica with Rob Garver an article, Six Drugs the FDA Doesn't Want You to Know Relied on Tainted Data. That was in 2013. What's the status of those drugs?
We don't know. This has to do with a big fraud at a Houston CRO called Sotero. Sotero did this research, but for about 5 years they were faking the data. FDA found out about it. A whole bunch of drugs on the market were based on this data, yet the FDA was completely silent about which drugs were affected and whether it was a danger to us.
So we don't know whether they're available to us or not. What about Sotero? Is it still in business?
Sotero declared bankruptcy. I'm not exactly sure what the status of the pieces are.
Why didn't they pull Ketek from the market?
Well, as with anything, there's kind of a benefit and a risk. Every new antibiotic attacks bugs that some of the other antibiotics don't, so it has some value. The question is that value worth the danger of doing liver damage? And so the Ketek trials showed that the dangers were higher, so they restricted the use. But sometimes they do have to pull drugs, like the COX-2 inhibitors, which were fancy aspirins, which over time you find that the risks are more than you can sustain.
So if I go to a doctor, the doctor says, I'm going to give you this really good antibiotic, Ketek. Should I say, can I have something else instead?
Well, if there's an alternative, I mean, there's certain classes of drugs, which have serious side effects. And so you've got to be careful.
My guest is Charles Seif, whose latest article for Slate is Are Your Medications Safe? We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we are back with Charles Seif, S-E-I-F-E, a journalism professor at NYU, author of a number of books, Sun in a Bottle, Proofiness, and also a fair amount of articles, including the most recent for Slate called Are Your Medications Safe? We have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. Before we get into more about what you've written about, we have a caller who has some personal experience along these lines. Deborah from Newark. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. This is important and it's difficult. In the late 90s, I worked with an individual who created unique, one-of-a-kind databases for private industry. And she received a contract from one of the major pharmaceutical companies here in New Jersey to create a one-of-a-kind database to process the results of clinical trial studies for an experimental med, for an experimental drug, so that it would then be processed into a study for presentation for approval by FDA. Now, the only work she had done in medicine before was with hospitals that would have medical research centers dealing with long-term projects. She had not worked for a private pharmaceutical before. And about a month into that project, in conversations back and forth with the researcher and the higher-ups who hired her, she became aware that the expectation was for her to create a database that would spin the raw results of the research in such a way that it would come out positively enough to pass muster with FDA, but not be identifiable because the fraud is not at the level of the researcher or at the level of what the company does with the researcher's results, but hidden in the very structure of the code of the database. And when she became aware of that, after about a month, she broke that contract and backed out.
Are you willing to tell us the name of the pharmaceutical company?
I'll say they're not in the state anymore.
Well, thank you so much. Is this a typical situation, Charles?
I hear allegations of high-level tinkering like this, sometimes with reporting.
She said it's really like a spin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's certainly no question that given a set of data, the FDA or a drug company is going to take the set of data and present it in the most favorable light. And that sometimes includes some statistical monkey business. Actually tinkering with a code in a level that would be fraudulent is hard to prove. But, you know, you might encourage your friend to act as a whistleblower.
Now, you published an article about this in JAMA Internal Medicine. How did doctors and drug makers react to that article?
So far, the reaction has been very positive. And I've gotten emails from physicians and whistleblowers saying, thank you for doing this, and here's another example. And so it's amazing the amount of how it's struck a nerve.
The subtitle of that article was Out of Sight, Out of Mind, Out of the Peer-Reviewed Literature. Don't drug companies have to publish their findings in peer-reviewed literature?
No. There's no requirement at all that they publish anything. Usually the large trials do get published, but a lot winds up not getting published at all. And there's a vast dark literature out there, stuff that doesn't get published, which actually biases our view of how good drugs are.
This would suggest that the FDA is protecting drug makers at the expense or the possible expense of the public.
I would say in certain cases, yes, this is absolutely true. That there are, for example, certain claims that the FDA allows to be published on labels that they know are based upon fraudulent data.
We see these commercials on television where these people are also happy and they're romping around in the sun and the fields. And then a voice comes on and tells us all of the terrible things that might result from taking this drug. Isn't the FDA doing their job there?
Well, nominally they are. I mean, that they are requiring the drug companies to tell all the side effects of these drugs. However, I think the watchdog element of the FDA has been defanged a little bit by regulatory capture and really looking hard to see whether these effects are serious, as sometimes even whether these claims are valid, is getting weaker. And some choices, for example, looking at it's kind of a statistical point, looking at whether a drug is better than another drug versus whether it's not inferior is actually a big thing. And the FDA is kind of moving towards weaker and weaker proofs of whether something is effective or not.
You write about a Record 4 study. What is that study about?
Yes. There were four studies, Record 1, 2, 3, and 4, which were key to the approval of one of these novel anti-clotting drugs called Xarelto. And all
who,
four
who makes Xarelto?
I believe that's Johnson & Johnson, Janssen.
So it's a big company.
Yes, yes. So all four of these trials were problematic. Record 4 in particular was so bad. The FDA inspectors, and they also had audits back from a third-party company, showed that 8 out of 16 sites that were looked at had major, major, major problems, including fraud. So they decided that this, contrary to what the usual practice, they said Record 4 is worthless. We cannot accept it as a study showing safety or effectiveness. Yet Record 4 is sitting in the peer-reviewed literature until that JAMA Internal Medicine piece was published. There was no critique of it on that basis.
When we use the word fraud here, what are we really saying? People faking data? Fraud is a word that usually means illegal.
Yes. And again, we have to be a little careful in what you say because it's very hard to say in tense that disappearing records – can be something which is not intentional. Unblinding patients, when you're supposed to have a randomized blinded trial and people are peeking, that could happen accidentally. So you can't necessarily say that this is intentional, but something very bad is going on.
This is in the river of Rivaroxaban, is it what happened?
Rivaroxaban, yeah.
It's in that family?
Weren't there other
studies also compromised?
Yes. So Record 4 was the one which the FDA said was completely garbage. Record 2, one of these other studies, almost as bad. I mean, it was constant problems. And there are the other blood clotting agents, the new ones, apixaban, which is similar in many ways. Their study Aristotle had a major incidence where in China there was tampering with records. And if you took away this data from that site, one of the major claims of efficacy no longer became statistically significant.
How did the FDA react to the evidence of that fraud?
Well, what they did was they did a sensitivity analysis, which means they say, okay, what happens if you remove this trial? What happens if you remove all the sites in China which were run by the guy who was in charge, who was likely responsible for the fraud? And they did this analysis. And they said, well, even if that's the case, it doesn't affect too much our reliance on this data. So they accepted it as
so,
a whole.
Is apixaban still on the market?
Apixaban is still on the market, yes.
And are many of these tests being done in China because we keep on shipping so many other things off to China?
Yes. Yes, in fact, one of the things that's going on now is that a lot of these sites, a lot of these trials are worldwide, and the FDA really doesn't have much of a reach into foreign sites.
Haven't there been wrongful death lawsuits involving rivaroxaban?
Yes. There have been wrongful death lawsuits involving all of rivaroxaban, I believe apixaban as well.
But these lawsuits haven't forced the FDA or the drug companies to disclose more information?
I don't believe at this point they have. I'm not sure these trials have gotten to discovery yet. To be fair, every new drug which is powerful in some way that's used for a life-threatening condition is going to have lawsuits against it. Doesn't mean that it's valid. But certain cases, I mean, you're getting class actions going on against rivaroxaban, certainly at this point, and that indicates maybe something's up.
Is there going to be anything done about the Record 4 studies now that your JAMA story is out?
We'll see. We'll see.
Because JAMA is one of the most respected journals in the medical field, the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Yes. And this, what I published was in JAMA Internal Medicine, which is one of their other journals. We'll see. Because, I mean, a lot of these studies, Aristotle and the Record 4 were in Lancet and New England Journal, if I recall correctly. And whether these journals will put an expression of concern or a footnote or something saying, look, the FDA has found problems, that's an open question. And I would wager that 6 months out from now, we'll look back and we'll still not see a flag on any of these studies.
My guest is Charles Seif. His latest article is Are Your Medication Safe? It's in Slate. Does Lancet or the New England Journal also ever retract their studies?
They do. They do. In fact, one of the hallmarks of a really solid peer-reviewed journal is that when something goes wrong, they transparently note it and will retract.
What does it take to pull a drug off the market?
Oh, it's a huge issue. Especially,
is fraud ever a reason given? Bad data from clinical trials, or does it take somebody dying?
Well, usually when a drug is taken off the market, many people have died or have been seriously
injured.
Or there
have been birth defects.
Or birth defects or things like that. There are cases where fraud has caused things to be pulled from the market. For example, right now there's an ongoing scandal having to do with – it's almost exactly like Zotero, which we discussed before the break. It's an Indian firm which is doing these tests. They've been faking tests for a number of years. We know that dozens of drugs that are on the market are backed by these faked trials. In Europe, they just recommended pulling about 700 drugs off the market. In the U.S., you hear nothing, just crickets.
I've heard stories both ways. There are drugs available in Europe that are not available here because the FDA won't pass them. And then, of course, there are many here that the Europeans consider unsafe. Shouldn't there just be an international standard?
Well, it's always hard. And there's trade issues. I mean, if you look at, say, artificial sweeteners, if it's produced in America, the Canadians don't necessarily want it. If it's produced in Canada, the Americans don't want it. If the Europeans produce it, a lot of this is wrapped in trade issues and doesn't necessarily have to do with safety. So it's a political issue as much as it is a health and safety issue.
Getting back to Zotero, when you spoke to Patrick Stone, a retired FDA investigator, what did he say about investigating Zotero in 2010?
Well, my partner, Rob Garver, was the one who actually did that interview. But Rob tells me that Patrick Stone kind of has this – he has this mixed feeling about catching Zotero. He said he definitely has pride, but he also wondered at the end whether the FDA should have done more with what they had found.
And do we know which drugs were passed that shouldn't have been passed?
No. To this day, and I know that the FDA still has not processed all of the repeat tests, we do not know. I had to crack the code to find it just six.
Now, I'm assuming that you got in touch with the FDA and you said, what's your response to all of this? What has been their response?
Their response has been to either dodge questions or to tell me flat out that we can't tell you.
They just can't tell you?
Yeah.
Are you the only one pursuing this? There must be other people in the media who see real problems here.
Oh, there are others, and they pursue.
Because we're not reading a lot. I mean, the Science Times doesn't seem to have done many articles on this.
No, but that's not kind of the Science Times wheelhouse. But if you look, for example, at the LA Times, David Willman, within the past week or so, wrote a very critical story having to do with this superbug out of LA. And it turns out that a medical device, which was cleared by the FDA, and the FDA knew about, had this problem with trapping bacteria, was responsible for this spread of the superbug. So it is out there. It just doesn't seem to get the traction that perhaps it should.
What about doctors? You mentioned you said the response of doctors to your article was very, very positive. Does that mean that they, if they know about these drugs, they're less likely to prescribe them? Doctors have often been implicated in the promotion of some of these scary drugs.
That's true. There's often a conflict of interest. But I think generally the typical doctor really does have his patients' affairs at heart. So anything that they that you do to make give them more information, give them more power to make the right choices, I think they appreciate.
Can the FDA be sued for negligence?
I think technically yes,
because that is their job, isn't it? Oversight and and only allowing safe drugs to come out on the market.
Yes, and that is their job, and you can argue that they're not doing their job properly. However, if they are operating within the accepted parameters, which I think they are, this is the way of doing business at the FDA. Unless you can kind of prove malfeasance, real kind of where we know we're going to break the rules here, it's really hard to make a case.
Well, looking the other way, when you know that fraud has been perpetrated, seems to me to be malfeasance. Right now, there's an anti-regulatory mood in Congress, but the whole idea of regulation is to protect the public.
That's right. But from their point of view, you can make the argument, say, okay, we know that this is a fraud being perpetrated. We know that it undermines our belief in this effectiveness. But we also know that this drug has been on the market for N years, that it is valuable to patients, that patients will scream if we take it off the market. And so perhaps we should look behind the scenes and find out rather than make a big stink. And I think that there's a lot of that going on.
Because we haven't had more people get really ill or die from these drugs, and it doesn't matter whether the tests were faked or not.
That's right. And I think they're kind of empiricists at heart, that once the drug is on market, watch how it goes and see whether it changes your belief in the first place.
What about you? You've been reporting on this for a while. Has it made you hesitant to take some medications or medications in general?
Yeah, I actually confess that there's a few things that I look differently at. I used to be a unabashed fan of generic drugs. In looking at how generic drugs are manufactured and the trials behind them, I'm a little more cautious, especially when it comes to extended release formulations of generics, which have turned out to be problematic.
Extended release, in other words, the compounds that they are packed in, the original one may have be in talcum. I'm making that up, but the generic may be in corn powder.
Yeah. Well, so the key drug itself should be the same, and is
the active ingredients
the active
are the
ingredients
same,
are the
aren't
same.
They?
But the way it is packed in the pill to have it release over time, like some things are 12-hour, 24-hour release, those technologies actually aren't the same across from the name brand to the generic. And there have been a number of problems with extended release, particularly with psychoactive medications, which have actually – a couple have been withdrawn in the past year or so.
On the other hand, I've also heard on this show from people who found one generic to be better than all the other drugs in the same general family, but they couldn't get the same generic every time. When doctors prescribed the generic, they would just get whatever the pharmacy had.
Yeah, and the whole supply system is predicated on the fact that these are completely interchangeable. And in some cases, it's pretty clear that they're not completely interchangeable.
So where do we go from here? Are we just going to have to accept this situation?
Well, I think at this point, yes. Until we kind of have a clamor for more transparency, I don't think we're going to get it. So I do think
I'm thinking about my audience. Mm-hmm. You know, right now they have heard this. I'm sure many people are alarmed by what they've heard and then can do nothing about it. You go to the doctor. The doctor says, here's a prescription, and you just have to take it on faith.
Yeah, and I mean it's ironic because you're talking about faith in a scientific discipline. We really do need a fix, I believe, that the FDA, is strained. It's doing its job as best as it can. And generally speaking, it does a pretty decent job. But at times it blocks transparency when things are going wrong. And unless someone comes in from the legislative side and says, you can't do this anymore, I think it's going to be business as usual.
Charles Seif's latest article is on Slate. It's Are Your Medications Safe? Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you so much for having me.